the gorgeous confines of Melbourne, Australia, across the USA and 61 countries spanning the globe, Expat Aggressive Radio presents The Bill Show with Bill and Randall. Now fasten your seatbelts, kids, because here are the loudest fat lefties on the net, Bill and Randy.
To the Bill Show, ladies and gentlemen. Oh my God! As the seas grow colder and life on this earth becomes more precarious, ladies and gentlemen, Britain's economic system decided to fuck off. As they have decided to leave the EU, we've been out for a couple of weeks, so a lot of things have happened since the last time we did a show, and. We've been doing this for about 4 years, so very rarely do we take a break. And we had some personal stuff that we had to clear up, family, friends, personal things. So we took a little time off after California came in. But today, of course, we're going to be right back on duty. Randy's going to be here a little bit later on. We're going to be talking a little bit about Brexit, which, of course, is the joke on every person in the stock market, including if you have to have a 401k. We're going to talk a little bit about why do you think that might have happened. Instead of yelling at the people for being stupid, we're going to talk about why. We're also going to talk about the big changes in the Trump campaign since last we got together. It looks like there's been some big changes as they realize that Corey Lewandowski and the folks from Lowell, Massachusetts, former state's policeman, might be in over his head. He's been fired, but he's been busy as well. New York Daily News has a problem with Bernie Sanders. We're going to talk a little bit about that. And we're going to talk a little bit about the new adventures of Corey Lewandowski, what exactly he's doing now. Also, we're going to have some great rant by Uncle Randy and our tinfoil hats, as usual, on this is our show 150, ladies and gentlemen, 150 shows that we have done here. Now, in the first part of our little activity now, we're going to talk a little bit about Brexit or the panic. Britain has voted, according to the New York Times, just about a week ago, printed, voted to leave the European Union. A historic decision, sure to reshape the nation's place in the world. It rattled the continent and rocked political establishments throughout the West, and it has done that. Close to $1 trillion wiped off the stock market. Not long after the vote tally was completed, David Cameron, your favorite conservative prime minister, who was so cocky about the result that he said, "Yeah, well, we'll have a plebiscite, no problem. Oh, we'll win." Walking away. Nah, it didn't work out that way, so he's gone. He appeared in front of 10 Downing Street on right after the vote and announced he planned to step down. The stunning turn of events was accompanied by a plunge in financial markets, with the value of the British pound and stock prices plummeting. Yes, I know if you have a 401k, you're probably not very happy about that, but there's something really satisfying about rich people getting surprised by poor people not doing what they were told. That doesn't mean I support them leaving. It just means it amuses me. The margin of victory startled even the proponents of the British exit. The Leave campaign won 52% to 48%. More than 17.4 million people voted in the referendum on Thursday to sever ties with the European Union, and about 16.1 million to remain in the bloc. That is more than a million people. A majority of over a million people. One of the things we wanted to talk about is why. We've had a lot of talk recently about how stupid people are. Don't they understand these are financial markets? We're going to talk about why. The social media was filled with a whole lot of people who usually are the, you know, the educated sections of our community, you know, the smart ones. And they said, for example, here's one we took at random. Is it just me, or does Brexit seem like a moment when the government should overrule a popular referendum? Well, no. I'm sorry, it's democracy. Mike Tiabi did a fantastic piece in the Rolling Stone. I suggest you have a read of it. And I'm quoting this piece by Matt Tiabi right now. On op-ed pages, there was a lot more of the same. Harvard economics professor and chess grandmaster in his spare time, and I also understand he solves crimes. Kenneth Rogoff wrote a piece for the Boston Globe, my hometown paper, and called it Britain's Democratic Failure. This isn't democracy. I'm sorry, it is. Just because you didn't win doesn't mean it's not democracy. It is a Russian roulette for republics. A decision of enormous consequence has been made without any appropriate checks and balances, which is French for being able to overrule what the people say. Rogoff then went on to do something that's become popular in pundit circles these days. He pointed to the lessons of antiquity. He went back over 1,000 years, Tiabi reported, and he said, very smart people have warned us against the dangers of allowing the rabble to make decisions. Rogoff is quoted as saying, since ancient times, he wrote, philosophers have tried to devise systems to try to balance the strengths of majority rule against the need to ensure that informed parties, rather than the rest of us, get a larger say in critical decisions. Presumably, playing the role of one of the informed parties would be Rogoff himself. What an ego. See, this is the thing that I can't bear. I don't agree with the decision. A lot of people I respect don't agree with the decision. But there were reasons that these people wanted to leave. And most of the people that wanted to leave the European Union in England weren't just racist. They were getting screwed. The EU wasn't working for them. The Independent from England had an article which went something like this. The gap between richest and poorest has dramatically widened in the past decade. No shit. Really? As wealthy households paid off their debts and piled up savings following the financial crisis, report warns today. Well, this is what happens. If you had money during the financial crisis, you weathered that storm. The very poor didn't. And right after the financial crisis, what did you do? You fucked with medical care. You brought in austerity measures. So you ground the poor into the dirt even more. By contrast, the worst off families are far less financially secure than before the recession triggered by the near collapse of several major banks. And by the way, the banks committed fraud. They committed fraud. So, I mean, these poor people, it wasn't their fault. Okay? They have an average, we'll go on with the article, they have an average of less than a week's pay set aside and are more often in the red. Younger workers have fallen behind older people, while homeowners, particularly those who have paid off their mortgages, have become increasingly affluent compared to their neighbors who are paying rent. And it's logical. As the stock market increased, the people that had money, well, they started to make money again. But all the social programs for these people over here, no. No, we're going to cut that. We're going to cut back on the National Health Service. We're going to try to privatize the National Health Service, which they tried to do. Okay, which is one of the envies of the world, by the way. This was also came from the poverty site in England, and it talks a little bit more about this hidden problem that is no longer hidden. In spite of the overall wealth of the European Union, poverty in the EU is still at a relatively high level. Nearly 1 in 7 people are at risk of poverty. The figures are even higher for some groups such as children and older people. However, the extent and seriousness of the problem is often not well understood either by policymakers or the general public. As a result, sufficient urgency is not given to its eradication. Well, the opposite was true. After 2008, the conservatives instituted an austerity program. They cut into public education. They cut into public health. So all those people who had no buffer during the 2008 financial crisis were ground into the dirt. And since then, globalization, or the EU, which really is a trade organization, has not benefited these people. So why do these people react with racism and extreme nationalism? We've seen it here in the United States with Trump, extreme nationalism and racism. Racism blatantly used to manipulate the public. And then if you look at the movement against the EU, same deal, man. People reacting with racism and with nationalism. I have a theory as to why the reaction became so sour. And by the way, it's very convenient for the powers that be to basically marginalize anyone who has a problem with free trade agreements in free trade areas that basically screw people to the ground financially, and austerity measures that are conservative and they literally screw people to the ground financially. It's very easy for them to try to discard that criticism by just saying, no, they're just a bunch of racists. They're not just a bunch of racists. They've been conditioned to do this. This is my theory, and I have a little theme for it just to wake you up in the middle of my talking. Here it is. It's time for my theory.
Now it's time for The Bill Show's My Theory.
Oh, what is my theory? Oh, what is my theory that it is? Wilkes, you may well ask me, what is my theory?
You know, I have far too much time on my hands. I really do. you do know that this podcast more or less is to move, amuse us. And, you know, if you enjoy it, great. Because that is so totally what I just did was totally selfish. There's no reason whatsoever to have that intro other than it tickles my funny bone. When we talk a bit about changing the subject to mind control, ladies and gentlemen, when we talk about why people react the way they react, and it involves what I learned at one time about a guy named Bernays. He was a psychologist. His name was Edward Bernays, and he was the nephew of Sigmund Freud. And he is popularly known as the father of public relations, the father of advertising. This guy was amazing. Let me tell you a little bit about him. He wrote in 1929, he wrote a book called Propaganda. Now, let me read a little bit from an article on him. Propaganda techniques were first codified and applied in a scientific manner by journalist Walter Lippmann and psychologist Edward Bernays, nephew of Sigmund Freud, early in the 20th century. During World War I, Lippmann and Bernays were hired by the then President of the United States, Woodrow Wilson, to participate in what was called the Creel Commission, the mission of which was to sway popular opinion in favor of entering World War I on the side of Britain. Bernays said in his 1928 book, sorry, it was 28, and this is from Propaganda. This is what he said in 1928. Listen to this. The conscious and intelligent manipulation of the organized habits and opinions of the masses is an important element in democratic society. Those who manipulate this unseen mechanism of society constitute an invisible government, which is the true ruling power of our country. Now, this is when all of you turn this off and say, oh my God, he's gone over the edge. He's sitting there, it's a conspiracy, and there are people in rooms, they're following me, and when I watch the television, they're talking directly to me. No, calm down, all right? The guy did exist, and his techniques are legendary in advertising. Let me tell you a little bit about, let me play something for you. This is Edward Bernays late in his life, and he was actually, he makes a joke about something, and I want you to hear it. He is introduced as the father of modern advertising. This is on David Letterman from 1984, Edward Bernays, later in his life.
Hi, doctor. Good to see you. Come on up over here. There you go.
Doctor, what? Tell me again what the doctor is. What are we dealing with here? You're the father of public relations.
What we're dealing with really is the concept that people will believe me more if you call me doctor.
Oh, I see.
So. Very funny little gag that he does with Letterman, right? You know, you'll believe me more if I'm a doctor. Where did he get that? Where did he get that? I mean, and then if you look back on some of the advertising at the time, Bernays consulted with private corporations, okay? One of the private corporations that Bernays consulted with was the tobacco industry, because right about that time, people started to notice that when you smoke, it's not good for you, you know? And later we'd find out for sure that it caused cancer, and they'd cover it up for 20 years. Yeah. Bernays was faced on how do you manage to use persuasive techniques to convince people to do something that is bad for them? Bernays and people who follow them use this idea, if it's a doctor, well, it must be good, even though doctors were telling patients don't smoke. Here's the ad that came out of that. Here it is.
You know, if you were to follow a busy doctor as he makes his daily round of calls, you'd find yourself having a mighty busy time keeping up with him. Time out for many men of medicine usually means just long enough to enjoy a cigarette. And because they know what a pleasure it is to smoke a mild, good-tasting cigarette, they're particular about the brand they choose. In a repeated national survey, doctors in all branches of medicine, doctors in all parts of the country were asked, "What cigarette do you smoke, doctor?" Once again, the brand named most was Camel. Yes, according to this repeated nationwide survey, more doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette. Why not change to Camels for the next 30 days and see what a difference it makes in your smoking enjoyment? See how Camels agree with your throat. See how mild and good-tasting a cigarette can be.
And Camel cigarettes are safe. Not like those other cigarettes. Because why? Because doctors smoke them. That's amazing. It's amazing manipulation. Think about it. You're basically convincing somebody to ignore facts and give them a reason to partake in a drug that you are giving them that is addictive. How was Bernays able to do that? Well, Bernays was able to do that because Uncle Sigmund, shared his research of the subconscious mind. And his idea basically is that we are civilized, but it's a thin veneer. And he became very, very fascinated the way people behave at war. And he became convinced that we're all doomed, by the way. So, great. But he was under the impression that basically there's a very thin veneer of civilization that separates us from the apes. And that there are certain primal urges. The urge for status, the need for love, the need for approval, the need for, you know, the need for revenge, the need for, you know, self-justification. All these needs, these primal kind of hardwired things, he decided, the need for sex, the need to procreate. Yeah, you know, which, by the way, look at advertising, please. Come on now. Tits, book bands, man. It's, you know, so you are being manipulated. And he was able to manipulate because he understood these theories that Sigmund Freud put out. And since then, the public relations or the media now that it is owned by only a few corporations, and it's been that way really since, in America, since Reagan. I mean, you broke down a lot of, you basically what Reagan did by deregulating and finishing with the equal time rule and all those things, he created an open opportunity for people like Roger Ailes at Fox News and Murdoch, who is from Australia, who owns Sky News, the largest news provider and a majority of the newspapers in the UK. These guys were propagandists. Okay? Fox News was a propaganda tool. And go with me on this. We have been at war constantly. Constantly. That war was sold to you the way Bernays sold cigarettes. News no longer became news. It was never a critique of what was happening. It was never an investigation of fact. You were sold that war, a completely unnecessary war in which trillions of dollars were basically seized away from the American treasury, embezzled by private corporations. Huge deals with no-bid contracts, arms industries. I tell you, the people that benefited from the Iraq war was not the Iraqi people, wasn't the American people. It was multinational corporations. They always do well. Let's listen back to hear how Fox News behaved during that war. Listen to some propaganda, folks.
I'm Shepard Smith in New York. For all of us on the Fox Report, thanks for trusting us for your news and information. With our nation on high alert and our armed forces preparing for war, stay brave, stay aware, and stay with Fox.
Yeah, folks, that's news. Stay brave. God knows what'll happen. Stay aware. God knows they're behind every moment. Bush played us like a violin. He sold the Iraq war to just about everybody. And his friends made a shitload of money. How do you sell war, folks? I'll tell you how you sell war if you're somebody like Bernays. You appeal to our primal hardwiring, tribalism and fear, nationalism and racism. Tribalism. Nationalism. Watch some clips from Fox News. Watch some clips from CBS. Watch some clips from NBC where you had Pentagon paid consultants going on programs commenting on the war with no mention whatsoever that they were paid by the Pentagon. This was propaganda. And it worked. And it was steeped in nationalism. And this happened in Britain too. The Falkland Islands crisis kept Thatcher in power. Nationalism, nationalism. You know? The key thing, if you're looking at a 1984 mentality, is us, our nation, and them. Racism. We've been doing it since the beginning, folks. Nips, krauts, towel heads, chinks, gooks. How do you get people to go to war? Oh, this is the oldest trick in the book. You got problems financially? You got problems economically? It's not the rich people. It's not the people who are controlling this media message to you. You know who it is? It's them. You know, the Jews. We have been keeping people at war now for over, what? The last time that we were at peace was during the Carter administration. We have been consistently at war. America has been consistently at war. And Britain has been consistently at war. Consistently. And the motivation for that war and that propaganda emphasizes nationalism and racism. Then what you do is you bring in globalization. The EU is an absolute example of globalization. The EU wasn't constructed to benefit people who were poor as we said before, people are suffering in the EU. It was put together as a trade organization to benefit the rich. This is why globalization sucks, folks. Because it does. The rich get richer and the poor get poorer. And there's evidence behind that. Statistical evidence that shows that a majority of wealth through globalization does not go to the lower half of society. It goes to the rich. But when you do that, folks, when the rich people, when I'm telling you, you know, few corporations controlling the media, Murdoch, I'm telling you, when you start brainwashing people to react to fear or crisis through nationalism and racism, as you have done, to keep the world at war for as long as you have done it, when they start suffering and they feel fear and poverty, when they panic, they will react the same way that you have trained them to. They'll look for the boogeyman because you trained them to do that. They'll start reacting in a racist way. Why? Because you've been priming that pump for years. Listen to talk radio in the United States. This shit has been oozing into people's heads for literally 15 years. Nationalism, globalization breaks down national boundaries. That's what it does. So you tell these people consistently that your nation matters, patriotism matters, and then you bring in globalization and effectively tear down national boundaries. They get angry. Because you trained them to react that way, in a nationalistic way. That's what you did. Listen to some of this. This is a, you know, Jimmy Kimmel always kind of said, well, let's make fun of Trump supporters. Seems to be a popular thing. Listen to just a few of these.
What would it take for Trump to lose your vote?
Nothing. There's nothing he could do to lose my vote.
What do you have to do to lose my vote? Be a socialist like Bernie or be a criminal like Hillary?
What would Trump have to do to lose your vote?
Take my guns.
That's it?
That's it.
Punching a woman right in the face on national TV.
Be a child molester?
Anything else?
That's about it.
Short of killing somebody, I don't know.
There's nothing he could do at all.
Nope.
Like murder somebody. Like...
Well, yeah, that would probably stop it right there.
What if he set the American flag on fire?
That's one of the freedoms that Donald Trump stands for.
What if a picture of Trump surfaced showing him smoking crack? Would you still vote for him?
Absolutely.
What if he had a Hitler mustache?
Absolutely.
What if he said that Japan and South Korea could get nuclear weapons?
Absolutely.
What if he stood in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shot somebody? Would you still vote for him?
Absolutely.
Now, we laugh at these people, and I do on the show, and of course Jimmy Kimmel does, and we laugh at them. But you know something? They're not genetically stupider than everybody else. All right? They're just people, you know? And when you defund an education system to the point where public schools are a joke, you know? And you keep people in poverty for a considerable amount of time. These are just people. The difference is they've been programmed. They've been programmed for years. Everything that Trump says is like the Manchurian candidate to these people. Nationalism, racism, all the things that have been implanted. If you listen to talk radio, these people are brainwashed. They are literally psychologically victims of mind control. And what really bothers me a lot about this Brexit vote is the way that the intelligentsia class has gotten pissed off, the way the rich class, the corporate class has gotten so pissed off with this. And they're yelling at these people, "No, you're stupid." Really? Let's say you train a dog, okay? And for every day, for 10 years. You say, fetch the ball, fetch the stick. There's a treat. Good girl. Fetch the ball, fetch the stick. Good girl. Fetch the ball, fetch the stick. You do it for 10 years. Then you've conditioned that dog to do that. Then one day you fetch the stick. He fetches it. And when he does it, you yell, bad dog. Don't be surprised when that dog turns on you. We'll be right back after this message.
First we take a groovy record, then we add a super sound DJ. Mix it with enthusiasm, and that's the super sound today.
And finally, new rule, now that the Trump phenomenon seems to have peaked, Americans must ask themselves, why? Why for so long was there one set of rules for everyone who's ever run for president, and then suddenly a completely new set for this Donald Trump person? Because when it comes to lowering the bar, he really raised the bar. So, it's been a year and a day since Donald Trump descended on an escalator to announce he was running for president, and since then, he's just kept on descending. So let me take you back in time to the pre-Trump era and show you what people used to think was a monstrous political gaffe. Here's Al Gore and Bush the First, each doing something at a debate that the country found to be beyond the pale.
There's differences.
Under Vice President, we have a question right here.
Yes, how has the national debt...
Shocking, isn't it? Sighing and looking at your watch to show such blatant disrespect for our sacred democracy. Then there's this guy at a debate, bragging about his dick.
He referred to my hands. If they're small, something else must be small. I guarantee you there's no problem. I guarantee.
What if Bush had done that? Read my lips, 6.5 inches. Or take the sensitive issue of race. There was a firestorm back in 92 when Ross Perot said to a black audience,
"Now, I don't have to tell you who gets hurt first when this sort of thing happens, do I? You people do."
Oh, my God, he said you people. Smother him with the AIDS quilt. George Allen was a rising star in 2006, and then his career was over when he said,
"This fella here over here with the yellow shirt, Macaca, or whatever his name is."
Did you hear it? Did you hear it, everybody? He said Macaca. Whatever the fuck that is. Trump tweets more racist shit than that before lunch. He retweets white supremacy. He began his campaign by calling an entire minority group rapists. He says our black president faked his birth and might be working with ISIS. He did this.
Oh, look at my African-American over here. Look at him.
That's not worse than you people? And what about basic old dumbness? I seem to remember Dan Quayle being pronounced unfit for office dumb because he misspelled potato. And Sarah Palin's brief flirtation with respectability came crashing down when she could not name what news sources she read.
All of them, any of them that have been in front of me over all these years.
But Trump doesn't even pretend he can read. He just hears things. I'm hearing. A lot of people are saying. This is his favorite news source. He hears things. It could be from a passing mental patient. It could be the voices in his own head. And when he does read, it's the National Enquirer. And he refers to it as the paper. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm not being fair. He does have one other news source.
All I know is what's on the internet.
Right, me too. I get my news from Pornhub. No wonder he once said,
I love the poorly educated.
John McCain and Bob Dole, both veterans, but war does things to a man. Both were accused of being too angry to be president. After all, Bob Dole once said this.
And Senator Dole, is there anything you'd like to say to the vice president?
Yeah, stop lying about my record.
What a raving lunatic! But this is okay.
I don't know what I said. I don't remember.
Yeah, what about that? Obama once just compared his poor bowling skills to the Special Olympics, cut to the apology tour, but we're good with this.
I don't know what I said.
And finally, the ultimate third rail, insulting the military. Obama got endless shit for once saluting with coffee in his hand, violating an ancient military rule dating to never. But Trump can say John McCain isn't a war hero? If Hillary said that, they'd be burning pantsuits in effigy.
Now it's time for the next episode of Psycho Trump.
I am officially running for President of the United States.
Yes, it's been a busy couple of weeks for old Psycho Trump. I've missed him. I must admit that I've missed him. When he wasn't congratulating himself on being right after the Orlando shooting about, Muslims entering the country, he reacted to the Brexit vote in a very peculiar way. He went to Scotland to promote his golf courses. They're fantastic golf courses. I love them. And he went on to say to the Scots who were there that who voted against leaving. Scotland voted against leaving. But he confuses Scotland with, you know, England. It's hard for Donald to actually figure out which countries he's in at any particular moment. We got off the plane or the helicopter or whatever it is nearby. By the way, there was this woman who was, it was delightful. Actually, it was on the internet the other day, was the 63-year-old woman. She's a nice old woman. She looks like a school teacher. That's what makes it so hilarious. And she wandered up, this nice old lady, and she wandered up to within sight of where the helicopter was landing with Trump in it. And she carried a sign. And the sign said something rather awful. But the police, I don't know whether they agreed with the sign, said, no, we can't remove her. It's public area. You're going to have to deal with it. The sign said, Trump is a cunt. This nice old lady. I mean, she looks like a librarian. You know,
I just think he's a cunt.
I'm sorry, I did use the word, but Jesus, that it was the comparison between the nice old lady and the word that made it hilarious for me. Anyway, he got out of the helicopter, averting his eyes from the truth that this nice old lady has obviously presented to him, and continued to congratulate Scotland on voting to leave the European Union, because now you're free, you're taking your country back. Well, the Scottish kind of figured out, you really don't know shit. And so the Scots got on, they all got on Twitter, and in response to Donald's announcement, this is what Donald said. He said, just arrived in Scotland, place is going wild over the vote. They took their country back, just like we'll take America back, no games. To which Scotland tweeted, in its own particular way, here's number one, Claire Underwood from Scotland. Hashtag real Donald Trump. Scotland voted to remain, you tit. Sue Perkins, Scotland voted to remain, you weapons-grade plum. let's see, what's the next one? Okay, Scotland wanted to remain in the EU, you utter twonk. Scotland wanted to remain in the EU, utter twonk. I was using the Trump family brain cell today. Can't do a Scottish accent, but these are priceless. Real Donald Trump. They voted in, you absolute fucking donut. A future leader, you couldn't lead an OAP egg and spoon race. An OAP egg and spoon race. I guess that's a thing in Scotland. This is from a guy whose hashtag is remember. Can the people of Scotland have the bits of our country that you built cheap, tacky golf resorts over back, please? Very nice. Gary Prosser went with the direct. They voted to remain, you spoon. Leanne Abbott added, you're such a gobshite. Scotland voted to remain in the EU. Tim Footman added, Scotland voted to stay, you witless fucking cocksplat. I'm having too much fun here. This is great. From Mac in Scotland. Scotland voted overwhelmingly to stay in the EU, you weasel-headed fuck nugget. I love this country. Scotland hates both Brexit and you, you mangled apricot hell beast. You mangled apricot hell beast. That is classic. Thank you very much. I love this country. A few more just because it amuses me. I had to cheer myself up after that last thing. Ayn McKinnon said, you utter and complete idiot. Landslide vote to remain from Scotland. UK vote only just managed to force us to leave. Andrew McConnell said, Scotland voted to remain, you clueless numpty. And finally, my favorite, and I think everybody can say it's theirs, Scotland voted to remain, you incompressible jizz trumpet. Thank you, Paul. Jizz trumpet, Paul.
Now it's time for another episode of Hillary the Inevitable.
So you get into the general election if you're the nominee for your party.
I will be the nominee for my party, Chris. That is already done, in effect.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, of course, it's time to check out the other end of the spectrum. Of course, Hillary the Inevitable, ladies and gentlemen. So we had Hillary. And by the way, there's a story that I thought I'd be able to get to today, but we're just running too long. I just talk too much. And we will do the Corey Lewandowski story on the next show. But this I had to talk about. Hillary Clinton is looking for a VP. And she got together with Liz Warren, who is obviously very eager to be Hillary's VP. And I got to say that if you're going to get a VP, Liz Warren seems to be the ticket, because this is her tryout, her audition for campaigning with Hillary. One of the great things that Liz Warren takes to that ticket is authenticity, a human-like appearance, the ability to, you know, talk to people without looking like a cyborg. And she did a great job. So this goes to Ohio, where she did obviously an audition to become Hillary's VP. I personally think that if I got a vote, having Warren on the ticket would certainly solve a lot of problems. But so let's have a listen to what Liz Warren did. She ripped into Trump. My God, no one does it better. This is Liz Warren in Ohio with Hillary the Inevitable.
English soccer. It really was.
Okay. Well, I was actually talking about what happened in Ohio, where presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton teamed up.
Oh, yeah, I saw that,
no,
too.
No, I wasn't talking about that.
I saw that.
You didn't like it?
No, I didn't say that.
Okay. You look like you have a little
I like
scowl on your face.
Fine. No.
You liked it fine.
You liked it fine.
No. All right. Well, Senator Elizabeth Warren and Hillary Clinton, they teamed up and took on Donald Trump. Before their joint appearance, Trump sent out a tweet saying crooked Hillary is wheeling out one of the least productive senators in the U.S. Senate, goofy Elizabeth Warren, who lied on Herridge. But at yesterday's Cincinnati event, it was Warren who was calling Trump goofy.
Donald Trump says he'll make America great again. It's right there. No, it's stamped on the front of his goofy hat. You want to see goofy? Look at him in that hat. When Donald Trump says great, I ask, great for who exactly? For millions of kids struggling to pay for an education? For millions of seniors barely surviving on Social Security? For families that don't fly to Scotland to play golf? When Donald Trump says he'll make America great, he means make it even greater for rich guys just like Donald Trump. Great for the guys who don't care how much they've already squeezed from everyone else. Great for the guys who always want more. Because that's who Donald Trump is, the guy who wants it all for himself. And watch out, because he will crush you into the dirt to get whatever he wants. That's who he is.
I am so delighted to be here with my friend and a great leader, Senator Elizabeth Warren. And no one works harder to make sure Wall Street never, never wrecks Main Street again.
Yes, you can hear the difference there between the person who's passionate and the automaton. And not only that, yes, she's been stopping Wall Street just the way we should, you know, when we're not going up to Goldman Sachs and making speeches for $250,000 a pop and not telling anybody what you said there. So I would imagine that probably what she said to Goldman Sachs probably wasn't what she said with Liz Warren around. I'm speculating here. But every time I bring that up, a bunch of Hillary people smack me on the head. How dare you have a memory? How dare you remember shit? Don't remember shit. We're all together now. I can't help it. I have a brain. But that being said, I gotta say, Liz Warren, she will bring humanity to that ticket, and that's exactly what it needs. Because the Arnold Schwarzenegger of politics, Hillary Clinton, needs a little humanity. Listen to it. Listen to the difference between the two speakers. It's obvious. And that's probably one of the things that Hillary's considering is the fact that she might get outshone by Warren. A lot of people down on Warren because she's considering running with Hillary. It's a very good tactical move, I think. You know, if somebody has to be the person inside Hillary Clinton's ear, I would hope that it would be someone like Liz Warren. And it would also signal something very, very important to the party. Unfortunately, the signals so far to us Bernie guys from the Clinton group have not been good. We've been more or less assaulted for not endorsing Hillary. You may have just heard that stuff, because that's all you hear on the media. What you don't hear is what's going on behind the scenes right now, or in the last weeks, during the platform fight at the Democratic, at the DNC. First of all, I want to read an article very quickly. This is from the Daily News, and the Daily News is the same paper that sandbagged Bernie Sanders. The publisher is a major contributor to the Clinton Foundation. They set up this complete and utter sandbagging in New York State that I still remember. And trust the Daily News to come out with this. This is off their editorial page. Burning down the houses. Does Sanders really want Hillary Clinton to win the presidency? Operating theory.
Bernie Sanders would be A-okay with a Trump presidency if it would mean Sanders' own elevation into the far-left activist hall of fame. Guys, I don't know where this hall of fame is. I know where Cooperstown is. I don't think we have a hall of fame. George McGovern. Yeah, but I didn't see him enshrined anywhere. I saw him basically hounded out of politics. I saw Dennis Kucinich finally have to sell his soul to Fox News. I've seen a lot of liberals, but I don't think that you elevate yourself in America by being a socialist. You know, what I love about these guys is they assume that Bernie has the same motivations that every cynical hack does, that they're just selfish. I'm going to go on. Sanders still refuses clearly to state the obvious, namely that for anyone who cares about the well-being of working people, immigrants, and liberal values, Hillary Clinton would be a far superior president to Trump. That's an out-and-out lie. He said it like 100 times. That's just a lie. That's just bullshit. I don't know. Where in your ass did you just take that? I'm going to get upset now. Instead, on Sunday, nearly three long weeks after his opponent officially secured the Democratic nomination, the Democrat of convenience gallingly suggested that his support, and by extension that of his followers, would be contingent on Clinton changing her stripes. We are trying to say to Secretary Clinton and the Clinton campaign, make it clear which side you are on, he odiously said. Well, first of all, it wasn't odious. Second of all, what they're trying to do is keep Hillary Clinton from peddling back on things she already said she would do during the campaign. Okay? This, as fewer than half of Sanders' backers in Texas told pollsters they will vote for Clinton. Proof his petulance is streaking down. How dare he? How dare you? Bow down! Bow down! And tell your followers what... You know, really, seriously, you really must stop acting like Cersei Lannister. Seriously, that's the problem. That's why you need a human like Liz Warren on your ticket. Because you are Cersei Lannister. You know, this is coming from the Clinton campaign. Make no mistake. This is from the Clinton campaign. We'll go on. Contrast Sanders' petty egotism with the fighting spirit of left-wing hero Senator Elizabeth Warren. You see, Liz will do it. What does that say about you? I don't know. I'm less prepared to sell my soul. Or maybe politically, it's actually a good idea. You get one of ours on their team, and you still have Sanders pressing from the outside to make changes within the party as an outsider. It's actually a very, very good strategy. I don't think Liz Warren is sold out on many things. You got to remember, Liz Warren was once a Republican. That's how far their party has gone. So there are a lot of things like Israel. I don't agree with her on anything on Israel. But when it comes to her passion for helping the middle class in America, you can't touch her. She's got guts, she's passionate, and I like her. So there. But I think that both of them together, very good idea. Seeking to cloak his deeply destructive behavior in the garb of principle, son of principle, Sunday Sanders claimed, "What we are trying to say to the Clinton campaign, stand up, be bolder than you have been. What we are doing is trying to say to Sanders, drop the Messiah complex and shut up." Okay, sorry. This gets the Bill Show's Golden Fart Award. And here it is. Thank you. That's a juicy fart from the New York Daily News. Really? Really? You know what the problem is that, and I'm going to tell you exactly what the problem has been, and the Daily News damn well knows it. The problem is that there are two issues that Clinton said she was in favor of during the primary campaign. One, she withdrew her support for the TPP, and two, a $15 minimum wage. So when our guys took her to task and said, listen, we want you to do what you said you would do during the primary campaign,
Okay? You agreed to these things. We pushed you into this. Okay? The first one was $15 an hour. Let's kind of look back when Hillary Clinton not only said she was endorsing the idea of $15 an hour, she stood on a stage with Cuomo in New York and took credit for it. Hillary Clinton, I know your guys won't put it in the language of the Democratic National Platform, and that's it. They won't. They turned it down. They won't put it in the language of the platform. But Hillary, remember you were saying this shit not too long ago? Here she is with Cuomo.
Do that again in
Senator,
America.
I'm going to have you respond in a moment. Stand by.
Hold it.
You will respond in a moment, but I have to follow up with Secretary Clinton. You stood on the stage with Governor Cuomo in support of new legislation to raise New York's minimum wage to $15 an hour. But you do not support raising the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour. As president, if a Democratic Congress put a $15 minimum wage bill on your desk, would you sign it?
Well, of course I would. And I have supported the fight for 15.
Yeah, that was only, let me see. That was only, 10 weeks ago? Really, seriously, Hillary. You know, you've got to learn that even when you lie, people, you know, we're not puppies. We're not like sitting there going, it's like, my owner has left the room. Okay, I can't remember anything. Yeah, we can remember. We can remember 12 weeks ago. We can remember that. You said that. You said you'd sign it, and you said you'd for it. Yet, when we go to the DNC and get a $15 plank and want to put it in the Democratic platform, which is just, it's like a mission statement, okay? It's what we hope for. You won't even allow it in the platform? That's why we don't like you. Seriously, man. It's $15 an hour. You should be pushing for it. You got a problem with that? Sorry. Here's another one. The TPP, another trade agreement. What a great idea. Because Britain is an example of how people feel about free trade agreements. They tend to fuck with you. But you're going to put the Trans-Pacific Partnership, for those of you who don't know anything about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and I'll just give it to you in a nutshell. With the Trans-Pacific Partnership, all corporate entities will no longer have to go to trial in countries. All trade negotiation, all corporate law will be done by a tribunal of corporate lawyers. It basically dissolves the sovereignty of nations. Yeah, I'll give you an example. The Keystone Pipeline, right? We thought, hey, that might not be a good idea. It could pollute the atmosphere and kill us. So we decided not to do it. But this is what's happening now. Canada, all right, TransCanada, those happy people who thought they had an in with the State Department, it was going to be fine. We'll just put the pipeline in, no problem. Well, they're suing not for the profits that they have made, not for expenses that they've incurred. No. They're suing the United States government for the future profits they think they would have made over a time period. $15 billion. That's what TransCanada, a multinational corporation, gets to do. Now, win or lose, America can probably absorb a $15 billion debt. But what about the third world country down the block? What about the time they start putting in environmental laws? Some of these companies make more money than their entire gross national product. So say goodbye to environmental laws. Right at a time when we probably should be putting some in. That's what the TPP does, guys. Another excuse to ship jobs overseas to people who work for 2 cents an hour and don't have a union. Hillary voiced a disagreement with the TPP on the campaign trail. Listen to this.
What I know about it as of today, I am not in favor
of what I have learned about it.
So you found out something about it, and when you happened to be in the state where you had to get people like unions who don't like the TPP, that's what you said. You said what you learned about it, you're not in favor of it. Well, we just want to hold you to that. You know why we want to hold you to that? Because this is what you said before the campaign about the TPP.
We should aim for true regional integration. And that is the spirit behind the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
We're excited about the innovative trade agreement called the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Yeah, that was before you learned stuff about it, right? Or you were running for president. Gee, I don't know why we don't trust you, Hillary. So, Hillary, if you and the New York Daily News have a problem with us holding you to your commitments, we're really sorry. And the New York Daily News can, I'm going to try not to swear here, go forth and multiply by yourself. We'll be right back with Randy's Rant.
And finally, new rule, if Republicans are going to keep calling states laboratories of democracy, they have to start looking at the results from the lab. California raised taxes on the wealthy a lot, and our economy is booming. We just passed France and India to become all by ourselves the world's sixth largest economy, soon to be fifth. Thanks, England. Whereas states like Kansas and Louisiana, that went back to the old trickle-down theory of cut taxes on the rich and they'll always do the right thing, are financial catastrophes. The results from the lab are in. Our mice are thriving. Yours are dead. Now, they say the definition of insanity is trying the same thing over and over and expecting different results, but I'm beginning to think that's actually the definition of being a conservative. Because it's not like we haven't tried trickle-down before, many times. It's not new. Despite the fact that when he took office, Kansas Governor Sam Brownback said, "We've got a different way, and it works." And by works, he meant it works the night shift at Del Taco. Yes, somehow, for the millionth time, when rich folks got a big tax cut, they pocketed it. And now Kansas is in a recession with a huge deficit. The band Kansas has more money. Down in Louisiana, Bobby Jindal tried the same stupid thing that Brownback did, and big surprise, the same result. $1 billion surplus became a $2 billion deficit, and now everything's getting cut. Because apparently when you take in less money, you have less money to spend. Crazy. I guess you aren't richer the less cash you have, unless you're Donald Trump. Okay, so now let's travel west to the laboratory called California, which not that long ago was being called an economic basket case. Unmanageable, they said, a failed state. But this is when we had either Republican-led legislatures or a Republican governor who turned out to be such a disaster, even his maid said, "I can't believe I fucked that guy." And here's the part where the experiment becomes crystal clear. Because after Arnold left office, we eliminated what scientists would call variables. In this case, the Republicans. Democrats, from governor on down, control every office and voting body in this state. So we can really study what happens when liberal policies are tried unimpeded. And the only thing I have to say to Republicans about that is, scoreboard, bitches. Republicans claimed cap and trade would drive up utility bills, but our electricity tab is now among the cheapest in the country. And I ought to know, because I use a lot of juice in my basement to grow my orchids. My orchids.
Orchids, they're pretty.
Yeah. California? California gave illegal immigrants driver's licenses and college tuition, and conservatives said encouraging immigrants like that would destroy the economy. But it didn't. Immigrants just take jobs Americans don't want to do, like raising their children. So maybe we are being invaded by Latinos and Asians, but it's not making us weaker. It's making us hotter. We did all the stuff conservatives warned us would make things even worse, but the sky didn't fall. Unemployment did. And growth shot up to over 4%. And a $26 billion deficit became an $11 billion surplus. For a rainy day, whatever that is. And that is mostly because we, horror of horrors, raised taxes on the rich. Fox News said we were insane, that the rich would flee the state. I mean, what does Laguna Beach have for wealthy people that they can't find in Nebraska? Folks, if states are laboratories of democracy, why are we wasting time replicating failed experiments? I thought the idea behind science is that you try something, and if it doesn't work, you try something else. You run these experiments so you can see which ones work, and the ones that do are replicated to other states, and the ones that don't are sent to Florida.
And now it's time to keep your hands and feet inside the vehicle at all times, because it's time again for Randy's Rant.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Randy's Rant, but I'm afraid I'm not ranting so much this time. I'm really just angry and frustrated because this is the show, the first show that we're doing since Orlando. Now, even though Orlando was only, 2 weeks ago, it was one of 43 shootings that day, killing 60, and another 250 shootings in the following 2 days, as people, I guess, got things out of their system. Killing another 60 people. I'm sorry. I'm just not knowing. I just don't know what to say or what to do about this. On that same evening, of course, John Oliver's show went to air. Let's have a listen to what John Oliver had to say.
Hello there, I'm John Oliver, and before we start the show tonight, I would like to quickly address the tragic events in Orlando. As I'm sure you know by now, at least 50 people were killed by a gunman at a gay nightclub in what is being described as a terrorist attack. And look, it's still early and details are still emerging, and right now this just hurts. And the worst thing is, this pain is so familiar. In Paris last November, terrorists seemed to target places symbolizing everything that is wonderful about France: culture, music, restaurants. And in Orlando, early this morning, the gunman attacked a Latin night at a gay club in the theme park capital of the world. And for the record, I will happily embrace a Latin night at a gay club at the theme park capital of the world as the ultimate symbol of what is truly wonderful about America. And it's hard to even know what to do in the wake of an event like this. We do have a comedy show for you. We'll begin it in a minute, with what will seem like jarringly inappropriate jangly music. And I'm sure there will be much more to say about Orlando going forward. But for right now, on a day when some dipshit terrorist wants us to focus on one man's act of brutality and hatred, it might be worth seeing this video, which was posted to Twitter today. It shows hundreds and hundreds of people this morning lining up around the block in Florida, waiting to donate blood. And it kind of reminds you that that terrorist dipshit is vastly outnumbered. And now, please enjoy our stupid show.
Well, like John Oliver said, it was damn frustrating, but and it hurt, and you just don't know what to say. He calls him a terrorist dipshit, but in the end, it turns out he wasn't. He was an American-born Muslim, yes, but he was a frustrated gay, I think, who'd frequented the club and had various contacts there. So that story obviously came out afterwards. But, you know, of course, everybody immediately jumps on the bandwagon in America. You know, guns, 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 we need more guns. And some of the worst comments would have probably been from friends like Pastor Steven Anderson from Tempe, Arizona, who also went on the air within a few hours and had this to say.
Hey, everybody. Pastor Steven Anderson here from Faithful Word Baptist Church in Tempe, Arizona. And I just wanted to record a quick video about the news this morning about the shooting in Orlando. I guess a Muslim terrorist went into a gay bar and shot him up. And there's 50 sodomites, homosexuals, that have been killed, and another 50-some-odd injured. And then the Muslim guy himself was shot by the police, it sounds like. And here's the good news and the bad news about this, you know. The good news is that there's 50 less pedophiles in this world because, you know, these homosexuals are a bunch of disgusting perverts and pedophiles. That's who was a victim here, are a bunch of just disgusting homosexuals at a gay bar, okay? But the bad news is that this is now going to be used, I'm sure, to push for gun control where, you know, law-abiding normal Americans are not going to be allowed to have guns for self-defense. And then I'm sure it's also going to be used to push an agenda against so-called hate speech. So Bible-believing Christian preachers who preach what the Bible actually says about homosexuality, that it's vile, that it's disgusting, that they're reprobates, you know, we're going to be blamed. Like, oh, it's all extremism. It's not just the Muslims, it's the Christians.
Of course, Pastor Use-By Date here, you know, again, confuses you know, homosexuals with pedophiles, which actually isn't the case. But what can you do? This guy is, again, a piece of shit that you don't want to have anything to do with. And it's really sad that he has to come out and say that the good news is there's 50 less people in the world, regardless of what their lifestyle is. So Steven Anderson of the Faith Baptist Church of Tempe, Arizona, you can go get fucked.
We're led by a man that is a very... Look, right. We're led by a man that either is not tough, not smart, or he's got something else in mind. And the something else in mind, you know, people can't believe it. People cannot be... they cannot believe that President Obama is acting the way he acts and can't even mention the words radical Islamic terrorism. There's something going on. It's inconceivable.
Right. Oh, and of course you recognize the incoherent ramblings of the possible candidate for the GOP for the leader of the free world, young Donald Trump, old Donald Trump. And I just had to play that because it just, everybody, like I say, jumps on the bandwagon, has something to say. Of course, he's blaming Barack, which seems to, for the last 7.5 years, been the national pastime in the United States. But, you know, I think what is called for, unfortunately, was immediately voted down by the Republicans who are in control of the House, which was to control assault rifles and even deny people on the fly list, no fly list, to be able to purchase guns, or people who've been mental treatment or whatever. Those four measures were almost immediately voted down by the Republicans, as you probably all know. And I'm just surprised you didn't all rise up against them, because and I hope come November that you vote the lot of them out of there just for that alone. Now, that is my rant, okay? Now, let's hear from one of our favorite shows. Of course, this is the words of Aaron Sorkin, as much as anyone, through the mouths of some terrific actors. And this is talking about gun laws on the West Wing.
Excuse me, but this White House uses the First Amendment to protect flag burning, to protect pornography, to ban school prayer. Why, when the Second Amendment clearly says that the federal government will not infringe upon a citizen's right to keep and bear arms, Toby.
In fact, it doesn't say that at all. The only way it says that is if you remove some words from it.
Oh, look.
It says a well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state, the government shall not infringe. The words regulated and militia are in the first sentence. I don't think the framers were thinking of three guys in a Dodge Durango.
You don't really know what the framers were thinking, do you?
No. But I do know that if you combine the populations of Great Britain, France, Germany, Japan, Switzerland, Sweden, Denmark, and Australia, you'll get a population roughly the size of the United States. We had 32,000 gun deaths last year. They had 112. You think it's because Americans are more homicidal by nature? Or do you think it's because those guys have gun control laws?
We're going to talk to some people and hear answers to that question. You're watching an expanded edition of Capital Beat. We're coming live.
Yes, nobody says it like Aaron Sorkin. I might play a little bit of some of his work a little later as well. Now, as we go, just to raise your spirits, a young British comedian, Russell Howard, has a show on the BBC. After the Paris attacks in November, he had this to say.
Paris should be a wake-up call for every American. Applications for gun permits have surged since the Paris attacks.
Was anybody in that dance hall able to shoot back? No.
Arm yourself and protect yourself.
We cannot wait for the police. We need to rely on ourselves.
One solution? Guns, guns, guns.
Pick up your boom-boom stick, America! We gotta shoot our way to peace. It's so depressing. Every single time there's a tragedy, it gets hijacked by fear-mongering, gun-obsessed idiots. I mean, look at the gun this tool has designed.
Florida gun manufacturer has designed an assault rifle with, guess what? Christian symbols on it.
I want a gun where if a Muslim terrorist grabs it, a bolt of lightning knocks him dead right on the spot.
A magic gun that kills Batman with Jesus lightning. It gets worse. Look what he's written on the gun.
We have Psalm 144:1. Blessed be the Lord my rock, who trains my hands for war and my fingers for battle.
What? You can write anything on a gun. That doesn't make it Christian. You can write God on a dildo. That doesn't make it religious. What are you doing? I'm trying to get closer to the Lord. It's insane. Look at the safety settings he's got.
We have three settings. Peace is safety. That means the gun won't fire. War is one bullet every time you squeeze the trigger. And God wills it, fully automatic.
God, that doesn't mean it's God's idea. Here's what I should have put on that gun. Put the guns down, you redneck cousin fuckers. This is what kills me the most. Look at his justification.
I'm a Christian, and I believe that it's right, and I am encouraging my people of my faith to take up arms.
That's exactly what ISIS do, you idiot.
We need to stop people hijacking a religion to kill people. By hijacking a religion to kill people.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is Randy's rant for this show, our sesquicentennial show. Isn't that a wonderful word, sesquicentennial? That means 150th anniversary. I think before we go, because I just really love the words of Aaron Sorkin, and I was really disappointed that his most recent effort, The Newsroom, did not have the success of his great opus, The West Wing. But recently, Bloomberg Politics had Jeff Daniels, who played the newsman Will McAvoy, on their show to discuss something. And they posed a question to him about the presumed candidate, Donald Trump. And he responded as Will McAvoy, obviously with writing, I believe, by the great Aaron Sorkin. Here it is. This will be a bit of a comedy break for us as well.
All right, so can you say in one sentence or less, all right, you know what I mean, can you say why Donald Trump is the best case scenario for Hillary Clinton?
Well, I think for the first time in election history, I think her opponent might donate to her campaign.
No. I'm going to hold you an answer on that. What makes Donald Trump the best case scenario for Hillary Clinton? Jeff, I'm not going to let you go back to the airport without giving me an actual answer on this question. What makes Donald...
Because he's not the best case scenario, John. That's my answer. Yeah, I mean, Donald Trump is a fact-bending loose cannon who alienates mainstream voters with everything he says. But he gets constant media attention for free. It won't be a day from now until November when Trump isn't on every TV channel. And with a straight face, you're going to tell me that electing a woman is unprecedented? Germany elected a female chancellor. Brazil elected a female president. Denmark, Poland, Korea, Argentina, Norway, Liberia, Cyprus are run by women. So 22 sovereign states in the world have already beat us on this.
All right. Okay, fine.
Okay, game change guy. Just in case you accidentally find yourself writing a third book, there's some things that you should know. And one of them is there's absolutely no evidence to support the statement that Trump is the best case scenario for Hillary Clinton. 38% of the people gave her a favorable rating. 30% of the people say that she's honest and trustworthy. And just 22% of Democrats say they're enthusiastic about her being the nominee. Sure, she beats Trump in some categories, like millennials who don't even show up to vote. She also leads in the number of messages deleted on her personal email server. But that aside, so when you ask what makes Trump the best case scenario for Hillary, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. His tiny hands?
And we'll be right back.
Yes, folks, it's that time again. Time to discuss the news and commentary we listen to because we hate our own heads. It's our tinfoil hat segment tonight.
Yeah, we're tinfoil hats. Well, you know, I'll tell you something. I'm looking at time because we have gone really long. So I'm going to actually change the tinfoil hats on executive decision because I'm doing the edit. And I went on a very long time. And so what we're going to do is I'm going to save our tinfoil hats for the next show when Randy's actually here. And I'm going to give you a hero. And we need heroes in this world. One of the greatest men, I think, for me, in my generation growing up in sports was Muhammad Ali. And Muhammad Ali was, you had no idea what he was to young boys growing up in America at the time I did. And... You know, I mean, he started winning fights, and then he became this presence, you know, this absolute media presence, but also someone who had guts, who had absolute convictions, you know. Learning about his stand against the Vietnam War and what he did and what it cost him to say, no, I'm not going to do that. I'll beat people up. I won't kill them. And but still be known as a tough competitor and just wily, but and hilarious. I mean, his stuff with Cosell, a guy named Howard Cosell, that was the first voice that comics in my time, when you grew up with George Carlin and Robert Klein and Billy Crystal, did a deadly Howard Cosell. This is Howard Cosell. And here he is, Muhammad Ali. Muhammad, how are you feeling about this fight? I'll tell you something, Cotel. I'm going to mess with them. I'm going to mess with them. I'm going to rope a dope with them. They never seen anything as fast as me. Because I float like a butterfly and sting like a bee. I do a lousy Muhammad Ali, but I happen to think my Cosell's pretty good. You can be the judge. And here they are, Muhammad Ali, the greatest, and Howard Cosell.
The relationship between Howard Cosell and Muhammad Ali was, as Howard might say,
a rarefied combination of two superior individuals filtered through the spectrum of media attention.
They both came from vastly different backgrounds. Cosell, an attorney with a plethora of opinions, developed his own intense style of sportscasting. Loved by some, disliked by others, he was ignored by no one. He sought out the tough competitors, and he always asked the tough questions. Ali, on the other hand, was the pin designed to puncture Cosell's balloon of pomposity. And that relationship, based on veiled admiration and visible conflict, resulted in some of the most memorable exchanges in the history of sports journalism.
Muhammad, was he doing anything differently up to the time you hit him from the first fight?
Well, Howard Cosell, what he was doing was this fella making all this noise is Howard Cosell. What he was doing, Howard?
Good luck. I hope it's not an act. I hope you mean it.
If it's an act, just look at my record and see if have the other fights been acts. Have they been acts?
Not so far.
Well, what makes you think I'm acting?
And with that final stage of the act.
This is unexpected. I didn't know you would invite me to do this. Oh, hold it. You must be on the boxing position and just have a little dance like we're boxing in just 1 second. I have to time it. And for 1 second. Right there, see?
Whom would you like to fight and where and when?
I'd like to fight whoever you think's the best, the number one man. I'd say he's Zor Foley.
I'm not sure that there's anybody left, really, for you to fight.
You.
That may come about someday. Thank you for coming on.
To stay in shape.
Are you taking Zor Foley too lightly?
Why would you say that?
Because every indication has been that you're confident that you can beat Zor.
I'm confident I can whip all of them. This ain't nothing new. My image is being confident. What you're trying to make it look like something new for? I'm always confident I can whip all of them.
You're being extremely truculent.
Whatever truculent mean, if that's good, I'm that.
Well, I tell you, Cosell, I've been taking oxygen because I needed the oxygen. What you will see is I won't need the oxygen tonight. I'm ready.
I want you so bad, I just get tired. I done made you great in this country, and you still popping off. I want you bad.
Wait, let's get the facts straight. I made you.
You made me.
Nobody knew you.
You made me.
I took a poor little kid from Lowerville
and made me.
Let's put it on the thing.
Anybody who didn't watch football didn't know you. Come on, it gets back with the interview now.
Number two. The body is now aging.
You ready?
A shell of what it used to be. The man's beset by fear. What are you going to do to George for me?
He just said the man's body is not what it used to be. The man is beset by fear. Talking about me. Are you crazy? If I had a lower IQ, I could enjoy your interview.
The great Howard Cosell and Muhammad Ali. Another indelible memory from my past childhood. And God bless him. Anyway, if you want to get in touch with us, you can get in touch with us at The Bill Show on XPR at our Facebook page. You can also check out thebillshow.net, thebillshow.net, everything Bill Show in one place. We haven't been near it for a while, so sorry. But you can leave comments, folks, and we certainly do read them. Want to say hello to all of our favorite people out there. Val, this is every show. Val from Great Falls. God, we love her. And just anybody else out there who has taken the trouble to listen to our podcast for 150 shows. God bless you. We'll be back with you next time. Until next time, stay well. Bye-bye, America, and all ships at sea.
Now it's time to feed them, give them their meds, and pack them away till next time. So long and good night from The Bill Show.